Good morning. Hi, everybody. I'm Dan Johnson, and welcome to Friday Morning Talk Show. And our topic this morning is the madness of Medicare. And I'm not saying that from a negative standpoint that Medicare is bad, so don't misunderstand me. In the studio with me is Lisa Stiller, representing Jobs with Justice and a strong Medicare advocate. Before we get into the phone calls, before we start ranting and raving madly and insanely, I want to cover a couple of things that we're going to need to know in this discussion. And that is, there are some terms that we talk about almost every day of the week, but yet sometimes we don't really completely understand them. You know what I mean, Lisa?
Yeah, they're terms that we throw around and people don't say, oh, without understanding what's really behind them.
Exactly. And one of the terms that we're going to look at right now is that thing called entitlement programs. And, you know, I found several sources where there were exhaustive descriptions of what entitlement programs are. But for our purposes this morning, I found one that I think will fit fairly nicely. Entitlement programs, the kind of government program that provides individuals with personal financial benefits or sometimes special government-provided goods or services to which an indefinite but usually rather large number of potential beneficiaries have a legal right, enforceable in court if necessary, whenever they meet eligibility conditions that are specified by the standing law that authorizes the program. The beneficiaries of entitlement programs are normally individual citizens or residents, but sometimes organizations such as business corporations, local governments, or even political parties may have similar special entitlements under certain programs. The most important example of entitlement programs at the federal level, and these are the ones that we're going to be most concerned with, in the United States would include Social Security, Medicare and Medicaid, most Veterans Administration programs, federal employee and military retirement plans, unemployment compensation, food stamps, and agricultural price support programs. Wow, it covers a lot of acreage right there. So because you need to know that the entitlement programs are those things that are on the chopping block, we have to be extremely concerned. So keep that in mind. Okay, what is Medicare? The very short, simple answer is Medicare, which was instituted in 1965 under the Lyndon Johnson administration, is a defined benefit health insurance program. Pure and simple. Okay? Now, we could get into the 95-page lawyer aspect of it, but we wouldn't have time for that. Now, the other thing that we need to cover is Medicaid. What is Medicaid as compared to Medicare? There are differences, but they sort of intertwine. Medicaid is the United States health program for people and families with low incomes and resources. It is a means-tested program that is jointly funded by the state and federal governments and is managed by the states. There are certain requirements to qualify for Medicaid. It's not like you can walk in and say, I'm ready for my Medicaid card. You have to qualify. Okay, that said, it's kind of laying the premise for what the Republican administration is suggesting should happen to Medicare over the next nearly 20 years. And it's devastating. I really think it is. So now that you have an understanding of where we're coming from, what we're talking about, I think it's important to understand what would happen, and Lisa, if you want to jump in, please feel free, what would happen if we were to lose some of those entitlements?
I think if you compare it to, let's say you have a flat tax of 10%, and people making $100,000 are going to be taxed 10%, and people making $10,000 are going to be 10%. Who's going to lose the most? And it's the same idea. The Republicans are trying to say everyone shared the sacrifice. The problem is there are large people on the end of the scale that cannot afford to share very much of any sacrifice. And it goes back to values and who do we value and what programs do we value and how do we value life.
And so when we look at that, and I want to refer quickly to an article that was written jointly by John Cohen and Dan Baltz from the Washington Post. There was a Washington Post ABC poll taken, and it found that 78% of those polled oppose cutting spending on Medicare as a way to chip away. So the majority here is saying, and around the world, around our world, that, hey, wait a minute, hold the phone, don't be so quick to start cutting these things. Phone lines are open, 503-231-8187. That's our number. If you've got a question about Medicare, now, we're not going to take the phone call that says, is my gout covered under Medicare? We want to talk about Medicare coverage. What is your experience with Medicare? I'm on Medicare, okay? And most of my friends are on Medicare. And so you have some sort of an experience or background with Medicare. And what would happen to you if you were to lose those Medicare benefits?
There's a statistic I want to throw out for the listeners. National Council on Aging, if you go to their website, they have wonderful stuff. And according to them, about one-third of seniors are living, 90% of their income is from Social Security. The Medicare cuts that Ryan is proposing would have seniors spending an average of about $6,400 a year more on Medicare. Now, if you take those two together, what are we doing to our senior citizens?
We're putting us deeper in the hole. Almost burying us. But I think I found that one that you were talking about, and I'm scanning my notes here. Here it is right here. The Center for Budget and Policy. Now, here's another interesting statistic. The Center for Budget and Policy reports in 2022, the first year the voucher, if Ryan's voucher system would come to fruition, the first year the voucher would apply, Congressional Budget Office estimates that total health care expenditures for a typical 65-year-old would be almost 40% higher with private coverage under the Ryan plan than they would be with a continuation of traditional Medicare. The CBO also finds that the beneficiary's annual out-of-pocket cost, and this goes to what you just talked about, the annual out-of-pocket cost would more than double from $6,150 a year to $12,500. In later years, as the value of the voucher eroded, the increase in out-of-pocket cost would be even greater.
And you think about the average Social Security check being, what, $900 to $1,400, somewhere in there?
Right.
And you think of those seniors taking $400 to $500 more a month out of that check. And some of the other budget balancing things that seniors do is food and housing. It's outrageous. And we're going to end up spending more than entitlement money for housing for seniors, for homelessness issues, and all the other things. Seniors are the fastest growing part of the population now seeking bankruptcy.
And oh, absolutely.
It's going to skyrocket.
Absolutely. Lisa, we have a caller on line one. Tom is on line one. Good morning, Tom.
Yeah, you ran by a so-called definition when you opened up there. You said plain and simple. Well, it's not plain and simple. That's the you're talking way too fast for your callers, and I think you're putting out an awful lot of bullshit. Thank you.
All right, he's a gone, and we're not going to, folks, try to keep your conversation decent, okay? Thank you very much. That's all I got to say. But we are going to keep the phone lines open, 503-231-8187, and we are not going to tolerate any nasty language. Okay? And I thought I saw another line break. Nope. All right. I guess the Republicans may think, and I'll talk nice and slow for Tom so that he understands. There is a point where the Republicans get one little bright spot. Just 34% of Americans say Medicare should be changed along the lines outlined in the Ryan budget proposal, shifting it away from a defined benefit plan. Under that proposal, recipients would select from a group of insurance plans providing guaranteed coverage, and the government would provide a payment to the insurer, subsidizing the cost. Advocates say this approach is more sophisticated than a pure voucher plan. I don't see that. I mean, have you run across anything in your experience that would substantiate that?
I think most of what I've read basically supports the fact that seniors, because they're seniors, are basically going to be spending a whole lot more out of pocket. No matter, you can throw words around subsidies, vouchers, entitlements, I mean, you can throw all the words around. But once you tell seniors you're privatizing their Medicare and their medical expenses, it ends up adding up for seniors because it's not a government-paid plan anymore. It becomes an out-of-pocket plan.
Right, right. And the thing that's scary about this, if you look out to 2022, the projected number that they're looking at, the one thing that you cannot take into account is the fact that we don't know what the economy is going to be like in 2022. We don't know if we're going to be fully recovered by then. I mean, one would hope that we would be. But there are so many factors that come into play, it's really extremely difficult to be able to, you know, look that far out into the future, I would think.
And part of it is also saying, how are we going to recover? What are our values? Are we going to recover by forcing more seniors and elderly into poverty? Are we going to recover by doing this intelligently? We can cut military spending. We can realign our tax structure to be a more progressive structure, where the wealthiest Americans who are now getting a gazillion loopholes are starting to pay their fair share. The corporations, I mean, I guess you'd look at Bernie Sanders' list of the corporations. If the billions of dollars that they got in tax cuts had been paid into the federal government, we wouldn't even be having this conversation, maybe.
Absolutely. All right. We have a caller on the phone right now. And Gordon, thank you for calling.
Hi, good morning. So, so there's a couple of things I'd like to, I don't know, it's kind of funky to get on a radio show and try to get everything in like 2 or 3 minutes, but here we go. So, Medicare, all this stuff, I mean, no one's talking about, here's the deal, is we're so far in debt because of stuff. So no one's talking about Glass-Steagall. You put Glass-Steagall back in to play and put it back up on the pool table, the ball, that's going to remove all the debt. It's going to throw people in prison, and then we're not going to have to deal with the extremities of cuts that we're going to have to deal with here because of the debt and because of the debt created by the military system, so which the bankers own. Okay, so we got to go all the way back to the banking system that's creating this problem in the first place, who is actually in war with us to destroy the Constitution of the United States and the people's sovereignty. So, you know, so we have to really look at this and go back to the Glass-Steagall Act and get back into getting control of our finances.
Hey.
As far as not as go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I are you there?
Yeah, go ahead. I got one more thing that I wanted to say. But
go ahead. We've got two other callers behind you right now.
Okay, well, good. Okay, so let me see now if I can remember what I was going
to
say.
I didn't mean to do that.
Okay, so here I am. Let me tell you just a quick story. I'll try to be quick. Here I am living in the mainstream in Arizona for a while. I left Oregon. I come up to Mount Shasta in California, coming home back to Oregon after a life where, and I'm living naked. I took the shift, ended up living naked in a hot spring for about a year, 2 years. Didn't watch television for four. I come in, and finally, the first show I see in my house was a Charlie Rose show. And the guy, and this is in 2007, Charlie Rose is interviewing Richard, I don't know his last name, he was the old ExxonMobil CEO and chairman of ExxonMobil. He's sitting there talking, and he goes, and this is 6 months before he retired with the largest severance pay ever recorded in the history of a corporation. He says that we don't look 5 years from now. We're not looking at tomorrow. We, as a company and as a as this entity that sets policy for the federal government, can see 35 to 45 years in the future. We know what's going to happen. We know how much oil there is. We know the monetary system 45 years out. So they know what's going on, and this is something that we have to look at with you saying, just coming back, saying, well, I can't really imagine looking 5 years from now or whatever it was. These guys are purposely looking into the future and manifesting that reality now through what they're doing today. So we really got to look back at the money policy, get control of the banking system, put Glass-Steagall back, and value our safety net that's preventing these people that have worked so hard in their lives to be now thrown out with the best mice and the best from our nice Persian rugs.
Hey, so, Gordon, I appreciate your phone call. Thank you very much.
Appreciate your time.
All right. Bye-bye. Okay, let's go to the next caller. Joanne, are you there?
Hello?
Yes. Are you there, Joanne?
Yes, I am.
Thanks for being patient.
I am, even though, you know, it's an uncomfortable. Anyway, I have a couple of things to say. First of all this unhealthy energy against Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, Planned Parenthood, and all the other unhealthy energy in D.C. and that is evil. It's plain evil and wrong. And what we need to do, the problem is, what we need to do is end doing wars forever. And please, from now on, don't call seniors old people. Seniors, call us old people. Elders, seniors is a stupid label for us old people. Thank you for listening.
Well, no, thank you for listening. I appreciate your phone call. Okay, let's go to the next phone caller who's been waiting patiently. Crystal, I haven't talked to you since last week.
I know. I want to say thanks again, Dan, for a wonderful topic.
I take these really wonderful drugs, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Medicare.
What's on your mind?
Well, Joanne pretty much expressed what I would have said, except from her perspective, which is better. And I just want to say this is an interesting segue from Democracy Now! Talking about Earth Day. And, I mean, these corporate interests will just sell out the Earth and, you know, everybody and pit us all against each other. It's just so sad.
So, Crystal,
and these people are our friends and our neighbors. They work for these corporations, and you're like, dude, you know, get a hold of yourself.
What's your solution?
What?
What is your solution to this?
Hey, wait. Who's paying who here, man? The solution. What is your solution, Dan?
Well, no. See, I'm behind the microphone here, and I can say, you know, I think that going back to Joanne's phone call for just a moment, and I will admit, I'll tell you, I'm 67 years old, okay? So I'm in that what they consider senior world.
You're taking good care of yourself, right?
Oh, yeah, right.
Are you?
Yeah, right. I will admit, too, that, you know, I let life slip by me a little bit and made a few mistakes, but that's okay.
And we all will. That's
yeah.
why we need
so,
to
But the point being is, I don't care if I'm referred to as a senior citizen or an old dude or...
an elder.
Or no, nobody's ever going to call me an elder again. So, but
elder reporter.
There you go. There you go. But are you on Social Security? Or are you on Medicare, rather? Excuse me.
Oh, yes, yes.
Okay. And what is your feeling? Do you think that you would prefer to have Medicare kept right here the way it is, or do you think Medicare needs to be revamped some way?
Oh, it definitely needs to be revamped. I mean, that's what the conversation should be. We need to figure out, we need to sit down with what's a real budget and protect our seniors, protect people with disabilities, protect the earth. I mean, this is a no-brainer, and it would save money if we would just have a pro-health life, you know?
Crystal, I got a quick question for you.
Talk about the solar panels earlier, you know?
Yeah, Lisa has a question
for
you.
Being on Medicare, what are some of the things, just for Medicare, that you would like to see improved that would help you out?
It's like the education system. Just the bureaucracies are mind-boggling. It's just incredible.
I'll buy that.
Besides bureaucracy, how do you feel financially? How is the Medicare health system helping
you? I don't really, yeah, it doesn't, you can't, nobody can really live off of it. And I mean, I think the only regulation that allows that sort of thing is like blindness. I think that's the highest level. I don't really know the technicalities of all this stuff, but there's all these different levels, and I think it's good to help people in need, but the whole system is, you know, it's the reason it's being broken. I mean, it's being sold out is the real problem.
We have
things working just fine, and it keeps getting complicated, and you're like, what?
Crystal, let me throw something at you, if I may, and I promise it won't hurt. there is a term that is kicked around called a single-payer system.
Right, right.
Are you familiar with it?
Of course, everybody is.
And the reason I asked you the question was, there's been a lot of talk of the single-payer system being modeled somewhat of as Medicare for All, because Medicare is basically in some senses working. It's a program that single-payer is looking at saying, let's extend that to everyone and give everyone those benefits.
And at the same time, passed the Cochabamba Declaration for Mother Earth Rights, you know, Pachamama. It's like, we should just do this tomorrow and get it over with, you know? I mean, if we're going to have the revolution, we all have to be there at some level, so, you know.
Well, part of it depends on our values, and I think some of the previous callers touched on some things that are interesting. One being, someone was saying that, look who we're hurting. We're hurting people who worked all their lives for this money. Well, statistics are saying that people in their 50s and 60s, just before they get into the Social Security and Medicare age, are the ones that are having the toughest time getting back into the market after the recession. They're the ones who are still long-term unemployed.
Right, and women and people of color and teenagers. I mean, it's another world. We're living in another world, and we need to have a different conversation.
And when you have that conversation, what you're looking at, and you bring up some really good points, is that these are the people, when they get onto Medicare, when they get onto Social Security, are already going to have depleted whatever savings, whatever retirement they have, because they haven't been working. And they're going to enter this era, this part of their lives, with almost nothing. And if Ryan is saying, well, great, we want you to spend more money out of the nothing, what respect does that show, as you're trying to say, to our elders? It's showing absolutely no respect to the one-fourth, the one-fifth of seniors who just live on Social Security alone.
Now, I'm going to play a bit of a devil's advocate here. And
can I ask Dan, Lisa? I'm sorry, but I should let you get another caller. But before I go, can I just ask, I mean, basically, we should have this sort of conversation on cable all the time, but I just want to ask where you think we are in getting together, because, I don't know.
You mean in getting together in terms of rectifying the Medicare problems? You need to be a little bit more specific.
No, rectifying our whole mindset on how we destroy the earth and, you know, ourselves and this consumerism. I mean, like I was saying, these people are us. They're our neighbors, our friends, our relatives, and we're all like just not respecting each other.
I'm going to say this because we don't have time for one of my 300-hour seminars.
Now that you should get paid for.
I will say that a step towards rectifying all of those issues that you talked about starts with each individual person. And it doesn't mean that all of the problems are going to be solved. You know who Senator Betsy Johnson is? She's state senator.
Yeah.
Okay, Betsy and I are old friends. No relationship, though, just because we have the same last name.
What about the scandal with the airport?
Yeah, well, we're not going to get into that, okay?
Oh, I will someday.
Someday, all right. But the point is, one day Betsy was speaking before a large group over on the coast, and we were trying to solve employment problems and housing problems and all of those other really important issues. And Betsy got up and said, you know, we all want to get up and hit a home run out of the park. But the really important thing is that everybody gets up and hits a single or a double or a triple, and we make progress. You're not going to be doing it by every time you get up to bat trying to hit a home run. So it does take an individual effort, and it's really important. Listen, I think we have another caller, and we also have to take a break. It is 8:30 right now, and you're listening to Friday Morning Talk Radio. We are going to take a 60-second break. Thank you for the phone call, Crystal. All right. It is 8:31. You're listening to Friday Morning Radio. I'm Dan Johnson, along with my guest, Lisa Stiller. We're talking about the madness of Medicare before we open up the phone lines again. I want to remind you about what's coming up this morning on KBOO. At 9 on One Land, Many Voices host Wael El Sadeh and William Seaman return to the boycott and divestment sanctions campaign with guest Omar Baghouti, co-founder of the global BOS movement. Also an excerpt from Noam Chomsky's April 20th talk on the Middle East at Pacific University in Forest Grove. At 10, hear Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with our good friend Chris Andrea. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints Investigative News Radio with host Dennis Bernstein. At 11, Shahid Hamid hosts It Takes a Village with guest former gang member Ortho Banks. And at 11:30 on Community Grooves celebrates Earth Day and discusses sustainable culture. Guests include Annette Impact, Portland chapter leader, and a leader from Sustainable Northwest. Listeners are invited to call in and share thoughts. Thanks, KBOO members, for your support. If you are not a KBOO member, you can become one now by going to kboo.fm and clicking the tip jar. And we will take all the tips we can get. You are listening to Friday Morning Talk Radio. I'm Dan Johnson, along with my guest, Lisa Stiller. We are discussing the madness of Medicare. And I want to say, for the benefit of those many out there that might already be wondering, I did make several attempts to contact Senator Ron Wyden and Congressman Earl Blumenauer to join us here on the air. However, neither one of them keep my phone number on speed dial, so I wasn't totally surprised that they didn't call back. But we would have welcomed their call nonetheless. And I believe we have another caller on the line. Bill! Are you there, Bill?
Don't never drink no fluoride water.
Don't drink no fluoride water? Well, I won't drink the water, and I won't drink the Kool-Aid. How's that sound? Okay.
I guess one question maybe callers might be interested in discussing, because to me it always goes down to, I think Crystal was trying to get at, and maybe one of your other callers, is what our values are and who do we know. If you know our next-door neighbors, if you know people who are in Medicare, we know people who are struggling. What do we want for these people and what do we want for ourselves? Someone said we can't tell the future 10 years from now, 20 years from now, when you hit Medicare and Social Security, where are you going to be? Are we going to be in a recession? Are you going to be out of work? So we don't know where our neighbors are going to be, and we need to look at what do we want for ourselves and our family. And, you know, we all want the program to be solvent. And one thing that we were discussing for the show is Social Security is not part of the deficit. Social Security comes from another pot of money. So when people throw out that, well, we have to make Social Security solvent, so we have to solve the deficit problem, that's not linked. There are other ways to deal with Social Security. So the deficit and cutting is not going to help that one. Medicare in itself is a program that more or less has been working. There are definitely some improvements we need. It's working so well that people are talking about, let's give everyone Medicare. Let's create a single-payer program. And we look about cost savings, and we talk about businesses saving money. We talk about people getting preventative care and saving money. We talk about a system who will basically have seniors going into their senior years healthier and saving money. So those are just some items that might be good for discussion for people.
Our phone line is open, 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. I started saying this a little bit ago. I'm going to play the devil's advocate here just for a moment, if I may. With Medicare in mind, don't we already have a single-payer system in effect?
We have something that, you know, people say improved Medicare for all. I mean, we have Medicare. There are things we need to do. We need to look at the donut hole, the drug issues, the issues that seniors are still putting some money out of pocket for medical expenses. But basically, we have a system, a model that is going to work. And we take it down, we give it to everyone, and we create some real benefits. And yeah, we'll have to pay a little bit of money out of pocket to make that work. But in the long run, single payer emphasizes prevention. And once we start looking at a model that emphasizes prevention, that emphasizes the fact that let's get a hold of some of the things that later on are going to cost the Medicare system, the money it's costing, we're all going to save money.
So if I follow what you're saying, you're suggesting that in order to make it a full-fledged single-payer system, what you want to do is just modify the Medicare system as it exists now.
Right, and then make the changes that make it work better and give it to everyone. And in the long run, everyone benefits.
Well, here is a benefit to that that I can see, and that is how many times do you talk to or have you talked to someone who is an elder for Crystal's benefit, have talked to somebody that their doctor said, I'm not taking on any more Medicare patients.
Right.
That's devastating. You know, if you're 35 years old or 22 and a half, you don't care. But as you age and you start experiencing some of those difficulties that aging people experience, then But you can't find somebody that'll take Medicare. I'm fortunate that my doctor does, and she does a really good job with it. But there are some doctors in the area that do not take Medicare.
And that's part of the reforms that we have to look at is how much the doctor is being paid. Same with Medicaid. Doctors are getting, you know, less and less money. They're taking less and less Medicaid patients. So the system basically looks at that and says, let's fairly pay our doctors. Most countries with a single-payer system do not have that problem. Their doctors get close to what we get.
Right. And we have a caller on the line. No? Okay. Hang on a second. I'm hanging on to the table, the desk, the chairs. No, so it's a, while we're waiting for the caller to get set up here, that's just one aspect of the difficulty in going to Ryan's.
Right. And one of those fear is that, I mean, people, those of us who would like to see a Medicare for All, a single payer system, are saying, you know, we're putting in more pieces to privatize. We're locking insurance in even further, like the exchanges. Some people fear about the exchanges.
Right.
And Obama's bill.
Right.
We've locked in those insurance companies.
I'm assured by Mike that we do have a caller. Bernie, I've been waiting for your call.
Oh, hello. Well, I actually want to talk about that. I know somebody that's on Medicare.
Okay.
That is, she had all daughters, and I'm one of them, so we were not of a male group of people who were, we came from the 50s, and females were not sent to college. We were sent off to have children, and which I did not get any. So, in fact, I support my mother as best I can in helping her, who also had minimum wage job, living on very, very small Social Security. The deal is, you know, the rhetoric today is that we're going to leave this huge debt to our children. But if our children have to support their parents who don't have the, we're calling it entitlements now, and it's such a kind of a nasty word in my opinion, because
I hate the word.
I hate the word too, because the deal is that my mother worked so hard, and it's not really, I mean, she worked so, so hard to raise five daughters, and she came from a world, our society hasn't evolved all that far. I mean, we're getting there, and maybe in the next two generations we'll be there. But where I came from in the 50s, women were just basically taught that they weren't going to have education, and so therefore they were going to have a lower wage. And even still today, we do have a lower wage.
Let me ask you, are you on Medicare?
Oh, gosh, I'm not. Thank goodness I'm not on Medicare. But by the time I get there, and I don't have children to help me. So what happens with people who don't have family to back them when there really isn't enough? You know, when my, like, you know, if I were in my mother's shoes with no children, my mother has five children, and I'm the only one that really can help.
Sure. I think you have a valid point, and I want to ask Lisa, I don't want you to go away just yet, but I want to ask Lisa, are there any agencies, any support kind of groups around that you can think of that somebody like our caller can call on and say, hey, this is my situation?
I'm sure there's a whole bunch of them. Being relatively new to the area, I'm going to just say that I wish I knew more, but the National Council on Aging is a good start. AARP is an awesome start. The AARP just has all kinds of resources. There is the community action agencies, which also has some good resources. And if you look in the phone book, that's another good resource. I hate to say that generic
sure.
one out. But,
and
yeah,
and another one just came to mind that might be a real good one. Do you have access to a computer? Yeah, who doesn't, right? Go to a website called We Can Do Better.
Okay.
And I think it's wecandobetter.org.
Okay.
And they're a local group here in the Portland area. And I think they might be able to at least steer you in the right direction. And I think you have some valid concerns, by the way. I really do.
I'm obviously not the only one, but for the generations to come, the burden will be on family, you know, and so for people who are voting in, the people who would eliminate the programs that are going to help, and even WeCanDoBetter.org is funded. Anybody that's going to help has some amount of funding from government in some form.
Sure.
Right. And you think of our roads. Do you think of our roads and our schools and our libraries, those are government funded. Are those entitlements? I mean, we're all living on some kind of government something.
Exactly. Give them a shot, you know, I think that you might find it as a beginning resource.
Yeah, no, I'm good. I'm not complaining about it. I'm just saying that I see when the rhetoric says, oh, we're going to save your lives and get your kids out of debt because we're going to give big tax cuts to big people, and we're going to get rid of, you know, mom and dad's Social Security or Medicare, and Planned Parenthood is no longer going to help people not be pregnant and get seven more children. I'm just confused in my head about how that's going to help.
Well, I think you hit on something right there, and that is that some of our politicians in Washington loved to leave us confused.
Well, another thing that you mentioned I think is really important is she pointed out the discrepancy about what people get. People on minimum wage have been working really hard their whole lives, maybe $7, $8, $10, $12 an hour jobs, which is not a living wage. They get ready to retire versus those who are working in jobs that give you a good 401k retirement. They're going to be sitting in a different place.
Right.
I mean, look at, you know, those people who have been doing those other jobs are just as deserving as those doing the professional jobs of a decent retirement. And how do we balance that out and put a little more equity in the system and say, we've all put something into it, we should all have retire without having to worry about balancing food, medical care, rent, housing. That's just not a way to treat people.
Right. And another thing, just before we let you go, the other option that you have is, depending on where you live in Multnomah County, you can write your congressman.
Oh, sure. You know, there's another point I want to make, though. When we who love people make a point about how other people can't afford something, that doesn't ring with some folks. What rings with some folks is their own pocketbook. And when they realize that, I mean, they don't care about somebody else's mom and dad, but when they realize that generations to come in their own family and in their own pocketbook, their own mom and dad are not going to have what they need and their own pocketbook is going to be affected, that may actually cause them to realize that they're not going to vote for the right person if they're going to vote for somebody that's going to give a huge tax break to somebody, and eliminate programs that are going to affect their own economy in their own home.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you very much for your call. Appreciate it. I believe we have another caller on the line, if I'm not missed. Nathan?
Yeah, hello.
How are you, Nathan?
I'm doing good. Thank you for such an interesting topic this morning. I was just calling in because I'm very inspired by what you're talking about and am wanting to respond a little bit to the comment that was made about young folk right now, 25, 30, not seeing down the line to when they're going to be more in need of medical assistance and
right,
whatnot.
Right.
I feel like as someone who's within that age demographic, and who recently graduated from school with like $70,000 of debt and has not been able to find a job that has any sort of benefits or pays me enough to really pay off my loans, we're all kind of being left out to dry. And I think that, you know, I really resonated strongly with what was said about needing to get a good system set up so that everyone is able to get healthcare, starting at a young age, because the longer we wait, if I have to wait until I'm able to get Medicare or Medicaid to get medical services again, affordable medical services again, I'm going to be way more expensive at that point.
Absolutely. It doesn't get cheaper.
Right. And when you look at the people, like you were saying, who are in their 50s and 60s and who are now out of work and can't afford their COBRAs, you know, because they lost their jobs and their COBRAs are $600 a month, they're the ones who are doing exactly that. They're the ones saying, I guess I'll wait until I get Medicare, unless, you know, some states have a better Medicaid system than others, but none of them have a good one that's really going to cover most of the people. They're the ones putting it off. And today's people coming out of college is the other part of the population that is having trouble getting a job. And what happens when you're not covered with health insurance and you have to take that out of your pocket? You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
I'm gonna throw two things out here, Nathan, if you don't mind, that come to mind. The first thing is when you started describing yourself, a recent college grad, and the experiences that you're having in looking for a job, I put you in that scenario where early on I read the short piece from the Center for Budget and Policy Reports where you are that person in 2022. that is going to be ready for Medicare or health insurance at that time. And if the Republicans get their way, you know what? You're not going to be able to afford it.
Yeah, I think that's very true. And I mean, the more we shift power towards corporations and away from people, and the more we shift rights, the less we're really able to influence the political process that determines this.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because I think one of the things, and Lisa, you can agree with this or not, but I think one of the things that sets us apart between the Republican philosophy is that the Republicans don't look at you as a human being, a breathing, living entity. They look at you as a number, a statistic. And whereas, you know, there's a different way of looking at it. We are living, breathing human beings, and we have to find a way to jointly survive.
Right. But the Republicans are saying, let's look at the deficit. We want to cut the deficit. And that's their cold, hard way of saying, let's cut it. And so let's see how we can look at the deficit, and also how can we look at people, and what's the best way to work with people and, yes, work with our deficit and respect the people who are basically living on a lower wage or a lower income. And that's I think, the difference. And, you know, it really bothers me that we have that mindset. And the question throughout is, how do we change it? How do we get out there and influence the political system like our caller wants to do? And how do we say, no, this is not the way we want to go into 2020 treating people?
Absolutely. You know, Nathan, there is one suggestion I have for you, and I know that it's not going to put any money in your pocket. But if you are not already, you could always volunteer here at KBOO. Until you find a job.
That sounds really interesting. I'm currently doing a lot of volunteer work anyway. But how would I find out more about that?
Just go online to kboo.fm, and there is a link there to talk about joining, becoming a volunteer, going through the orientation session, or just give us a call here at the radio station.
Okay.
All righty.
I'll throw one more thing out there.
Sure. We got another caller on the line, so make it fast.
Sure, yeah. I definitely want to share the space. I just want to be really conscious of how much othering is going on in the conversation around, you know, it's this person's fault or this group of people's fault. And it's becoming a really divisive society that we're living in, a really conflict-oriented society. And personally, I feel that the only way we're going to find a way out of this is if we can figure out how to collaborate again.
Sure.
And figure out how to come back together as a country and as a people. As a very diverse and respectful country, full of very diverse and respectful people. And the more we continue to allow ourselves to divide on party lines that really don't represent us very well anymore, in my opinion, the harder it's going to be for us to talk to our neighbors and to create the solutions within our communities that we really need.
Absolutely.
So, thank you
Listen, young man, you have a good head on your shoulders. I wish you well.
Thank you. Yeah, I'll keep listening.
All righty. Okay, it is 8:52, and we've got a caller on the line. Kelly, how are you?
Hi, I've been on Social Security disability for about 8 years. It's Social Security disability for depression, and that's been my only income. And I wanted to talk about what that's been like so that younger people will get a sense of what it's like. And also, I don't expect anybody to solve this problem for me today. But most doctors that I can call dozens of doctors for general care, and they do not take Medicare. If I want to get any kind of holistic or alternative practitioner, they want like $300 or $400 put on the table up front, and they do not take Medicare. I've been told by traditional allopathic practitioners that in order for them to treat me, I have to be put on antidepressants, and I do not want to take antidepressants. So I've been refused care because of that. So I have not seen a doctor in like 6 years. You cannot get a mammogram unless you have a doctor, and I don't have a doctor. So I have not had a mammogram in all that time. So the prospect of paying double this money for for Medicare is sucked out of your Social Security check. It's not like you pay it. It's just taken out before you ever get your money. The prospect of paying double for that is really galling to me.
You know,
that's exactly the point that we're trying to make about Ryan's plan, is if you look at the $500 a month, $400 or $500 a month, that's going to come out of a senior's pocket who is living just like you are, it's absolutely unconscionable. One thing about the mammogram I want to throw in, if you call the American Cancer Society here in Portland, there are some programs that might be able to help you.
They do have programs, and you can sign up for it. But in order to actually have the test, you have to have a doctor. And the doctors that I've been to are telling me they won't treat me unless I get on antidepressants. And I don't want to be on antidepressants because of the problems that they have. So that cover their ass aspect of the care that they're offering to people is keeping me from getting general medical care. Okay, so I'm going to get off the line and let
everybody else
talk.
I'm just going to keep my big mouth shut because I wish I had even a good suggestion for you.
I know it's a bad problem,
but it's all bureaucracy. And you've just made the best case for single payer health care that we could make right there on the phone. So
yeah, wasn't Obama supposed to be our single payer guy? I wonder what happened to that.
Well, that's for another show. Let me tell you.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks.
Thank you for your call, and I wish you all the very best. Thank you. All right, we have one more call. Jack?
Yeah. Well, the single payer thing works in a lot of places in the world. It works pretty well. And the main reason it works is because they're not pouring half of their revenue into an expeditionary military force that occupies countries around the world. So it's a simple solution, part of it. The other is that the people not having jobs, the jobs have been exported, the productive sector has been gutted. What does this country do? It makes military products and it pushes paper. The financial sector has exploded, and I will throw, so the money is the problem. It's always the problem, and I'll throw this out again. I did it a couple of times, in fact. Have you ever heard of the idea of the Tobin tax?
It sounds vaguely familiar, but it doesn't register.
It's named after a world-famous economist. His name is Tobin, T-O-B-I-N, and his proposal is that you tax the financial sector. You tax every single transaction of any financial instrument, investments, stocks, bonds, in particular derivatives. And you put a modest tax, something around 1% or even 0.5%, 0.25%. If you do the math, you got trillions in transactions being conducted, trillions of dollars in transactions being conducted daily.
Hmm.
The math pretty much solved your problem right away. And, the financial sector has caused this depression, regardless of what they have to say about home mortgages.
You know, that
the leveraging out and the exponential expansion of the leverage through derivatives speculation caused the whole thing to come down, a big Ponzi scheme,
that,
as it were.
You know,
they should pay.
That's an interesting concept. I'd like to save that for another time, perhaps. Thank you for your call.
You're welcome.
All righty. How are we looking, Mike? Do we have another caller? Okay. Well, let's wrap it up then.
I think, a lot of callers have pointed out when that they're afraid of what's going to happen down the line. They're afraid of what's going to happen because of the big discrepancy in ideology and why can't we come together. So those are some of the points I've heard made. And again, it goes back to whose backs do we want to balance a budget on? It's a cliche. But again, it's our philosophy. We look long term. If we have healthier seniors, if we have healthier people with good homes, if we have healthy people without having mortgage problems, everyone wins because we pay less in those social programs for people who are staying on top of things. If we provide jobs, if we provide health care, we don't have all the holds that people are trying to seek to close to pay for and we're treating our people better.
Very good. I want to thank Lisa for joining us this morning, Lisa Stiller with Jobs with Justice. And I want to thank especially our callers. Everyone has, well, almost everybody, except our first caller, had some really insightful words to share with us. And I want to all wish you a great Earth Day as well. I'm Dan Johnson. This is Friday Morning Talk. We are wrapping it up for a Friday. Thank you very much for listening, and join us again next time. Stay tuned for more programming right here on KBOO FM 90.7.